Happy Pride Month, everybody. Wow. We're back. It's Pride Month. That's all there is to say. It's a good day. It's actually, it's raining outside right now, but some nice rain going to it. It's travel season. A lot of people going, a lot of people coming. So it's very exciting. Very exciting. But I'm not just sitting here talking to myself. No, sir. No, ma'am. This is a show called Crying in the Book Club, and we have some people here, like Emily. Hi, Emily.
Hi.
How go?
I'm doing all right.
How are you contributing to the theme of traveling this episode?
Well, after we conclude this recording, I will be traveling to my local train station to pick up one Chad Waller, friend of the show, to stay at my apartment for the weekend. So,
hell yeah.
That's what I have going on.
Wow, that's a good coincidence. That's great. Be sure to say hi to Chad for us. You know,
oh,
all our best.
Oh, and you know, I will.
When I say all our best, I mean Jean-Luc's here too.
I am here too. That is factual.
How are you contributing to Travel Week?
To Travel Week? Is that it's Travel Week? Okay.
It's Travel Week.
Like Shark Week.
Yeah, it's
just
so
like
exciting.
A week of TV programming.
Yeah.
I'm going to be traveling to my local Barnes & Noble to buy some 50% off Criterion discs. And also, you know, literally travel to, you know, go on vacation for a week. But
Okay. Yeah, you're the only one doing any actual traveling, I think.
That's true. Well, I don't know. Alex, you got any travel? You're traveling for, you celebrating America's independence on the 4th of July?
It's Canada. It's Canada Day long weekend. So got Monday off.
Sick.
Which is cool. Yeah, we're recording this on a Friday, actually. So,
which is unusual.
Yes, but too much traveling. So that's how it kind of goes.
Yeah.
But yeah, we are talking about a book that has the word traveling in the title. We talked about it, I think we mentioned it in the last show. We might not have.
I think
Who knows? But it's Traveling to Mars by Mark Russell and Roberto Melli. It's a little strange. It's an 11 issue miniseries because Mark Russell, they're just like, you know what? 12 issues. Nah, only hacks like Frank Miller do that kind of stuff. Let's keep it 11. And it wrapped up pretty recently. Like they just did a Kickstarter for the hardcover.
Yeah. I didn't realize how recent this comic was until like I started, like looking more into some details about it.
Yeah, and it's a little I don't know what I was gonna say. It's a book. It's got some characters in it, but it did get an Eisner nomination for Best Limited Series, which is cool. I'm not sure
deserved, in my opinion. We'll get into it, but deserved.
Yeah, the Eisner Awards are San Diego Comic Con. That's how they do it, I think.
Sounds probably this familiar. Summer.
But I think it'd be on last year's stuff, so I'm not sure. It might be. It's probably dual eligible.
Yeah, so it was last year that this was nominated for Best Limited Series. I don't know if it won or not, but we can do research, but that's not really my...
Just judging by my reading, it just kept saying Eisner nominated writer Mark Russell and not Eisner winning writer Mark Russell.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think it's a nom. I think it's, you know, probably someone more deserving like Tom King won it for trauma dumping or whatever he do. What a guy. But we're not here to talk about Tom King. We're here to talk about some folks. So there's main character in the book is Roy, middle-aged pet store owner with 6 months to live. But thankfully, he's chosen by the Easy Beef Company to claim Mars and gets $10 million for his mom, which is cool.
The Easy Beef Company being a like vegetarian meat replacement company.
Yeah. Yeah. Jean-Luc loves this book because, yes, two thumbs up. There we go. You got a couple
I need some
people
easy
got...
beef.
See? You know who else loves easy beef? Leopold, good old robot, who loses his voice trying to save Roy's life, but lives. And then a good friend Albert, yellow robot, looks to Roy as a god and is super cute. We got Candace, who's Roy's ex-wife, and, you know, introduced in the beginning of the story, and we're like, well, where is she? And she's, like, disappeared, which we get to. Roy's mom is Roy's mom, alive. Roy's dad is Roy's dad, religious and dead. And Dr. Rubens is a cool, well, he's a doctor guy, kind of an online companion during Roy's 6 month trip.
He's just like all my friends. He lives inside the computer screen.
And sometimes they send you gifts.
Yeah, it, that does happen. Yeah.
Actually. Damn.
Wow. Here's the plot summary, though.
It's just like Videodrome, kind of.
It's, you know, just like Videodrome.
The TV screen, and they're exactly doing bullshit.
Yeah, that's, you know, when I was reading this book, that was what kept coming to mind, is it's just like Videodrome.
I just added Videodrome.
Someone say.
The Videodrome criterion to my cart on barnesandnoble.com, so.
Oh, it's an online sale, so you can,
Well, it's on, okay. It's also in stores, but they don't have it at the, any of the nearby Barnes & Nobles, so I have to order it.
Oh, how sad, but good so for sales.
True.
So yeah, Traveling to Mars, 11 issue miniseries, and it introduces us to a former pet store owner named, no, not owner, he wishes, manager named Roy Livingston, the first human to ever set foot on Mars. Roy gets chosen by the Easy Beef Company for this mission for one simple reason: he's terminally ill and has no expectation of returning. So it's a 6-month trip. He's got like 4 months to live, but there's some stuff going on where the cancer that he has like doesn't believe in gravity or does. So it's, when he's in space, he's basically like doesn't have cancer, but on Mars he'll die right at, like, you know, 3 days later. So it's pretty cool. It kind of sets the stakes.
Yeah, it doesn't sound right, but I don't know enough about cancer to dispute it.
I mean, I've never been to Mars, I guess, so it's like, oh, okay, yeah, that thing. But he's joined on his mission by two robots, Leopold and Albert. They're equipped with artificial intelligence, and they kind of look at him as a sort of god. He's the only human that they've actually really met. They're like a week old when this thing starts and they're in space and kind of learning things. But this book is also flashing back to sort of the last days of human civilization, where there's the, you know, Mad Max style, like water wars and gas crisis and all that fun stuff that capitalism kind of brings.
Energy wars.
Yeah. He celebrates a lonely Thanksgiving on this 6-month trip. And they decided it was a good idea, the Easy Beef Company, to give him like little memory boxes of like things from his life, every couple months or so. So he kind of does a few flashbacks, and you learn about his relationship with his dad and his ex-wife who left for mysterious reasons. And then he gets the chance to talk to his wife. She's been gone for 20 years, and she shows up on a screen, but it turns out that she's actually a representative of the Truebound Paste and Seal Company and not his wife. And he's like, oh, she kind of looks like her, but yeah. And then they kind of do a whole thing where they're like, oh, either you claim that Mars for the Truebound Paste Company or we kill your wife. But then it turns out they don't actually have his wife. So lots of fun stuff. Roy eventually says final goodbyes to people of Earth, prepares to land on Mars. He thinks back to his wedding day and wonders if he'll ever hear from the love of his life. And then when he gets to Mars, the whole point, the whole point on why they want to go to Mars, Jesus Christ, is there's a natural gas deposit that this robot named Vera was like, oh, wow, there's so much natural gas here, guys, you should come. And that resource is really, really valuable on Earth. So it begins this kind of race for people to go there. Roy's leading, and then some other spaceships show up there with some convicts on it who don't really care about getting there alive. They're more like, let's just stop Roy and, you know, make sure that this company doesn't get it.
Well, do you want to hear about some research I just did?
Yes.
Research me.
So I'm on the International Space Station National Laboratory website.
Uh-huh.
And apparently, yes. It's not, we don't know if it's true, but it is apparently true that cancer cells, because of the gravity conditions, do actually behave differently in space.
Okay.
And there's no, like, I guess, from what I'm reading, there's not a scientific consensus as to how they work differently. But according to this article that was published in March of this year, I guess there's a pharmaceutical company that was just awarded a grant to test it. So I guess maybe we'll find out if Mark Russell was capping with this, or if he was onto something. Maybe he knows something we don't.
That interjection is perfect, because I've not only found my spot, but now I learned something. So,
yeah.
Wow. Well done, Mark Russell.
We're all here that's what we come here to do, is learn new
things. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, they get to Mars, and Roy meets Vera the robot, and it's kind of like, hey, where's all that natural gas you talked about? And Vera's like, psych, there's no natural gas. I was just kind of like...
Vera says, I made it the fuck up.
It really does. And Vera's basically like, you know, like, my job here was to collect samples, and I kept sending out my signal and no one was responding for so many years, so I decided to say there's natural gas, because, like, what the fuck, guys? Which, you know, Roy doesn't really take kindly to. And as this is happening, there's just a bunch of ships coming from the Easy Beef Company, you know, from Earth to Mars, and they're gonna get there, and it's like, going to be a little awkward when it's like humanity's last hope, quote unquote. And there's no natural gas there. But yeah, it turns out there's also a ton of robots on Mars throughout the years that were sent there to either, you know, gain info, soil samples, all that kind of stuff. And they are all like, hey, what's our purpose now? Are our creators coming? What do they have planned for us?
Because they've all been slowly abandoned over years, like, and because the humans on Earth don't think of them as, like, something that they need to care about, like, they just stop communicating and assume that that will be fine, and it, well, clearly wasn't.
Don't ghost your friends, folks. So yeah, the robots ask Roy if there's a purpose to their work and their life, and then he kind of doesn't respond. He goes on his ship, and it's like, what the fuck? But we get a flashback and we get to learn what happened to Candace. And basically, you know, at one point she got a supposedly reversible operation to keep her from getting pregnant at the time. And she really, her goal in life was to have kids. That's her thing in this book, in her life. And when they're ready to have kids, it turns out the procedure had complications and that they can no longer have kids. And this incident leads to Candace leaving without a word. Yeah, we learned that. And then Roy finds a letter from Dr. Rubens, good old internet friend. And it's a letter from Candace. So the mysterious Candace finally talks. And we learn that Candace became a midwife and found the joy of delivering hundreds of babies in the world. So she got her fulfillment. She never remarried. And she ends off her letter by saying, everything is forgiven and nothing else matters. Which kind of hits Roy in the feels a little bit. And he's like, okay, I'm going to go tell these robots what their purpose is and what their future is. And he starts off by apologizing on behalf of the creators and that they were, and it kind of reveals that, hey, you guys were abandoned. But you guys survived this long because they found each other and that they should embrace each other and leave their programming behind. Roy's last message to them is to find something they care about and follow that feeling wherever it takes them. And importantly, to run and hide if they see any other humans. At the end, Roy ends off burying his diary on Mars, which he's narrating this whole thing in a monologue style. And he ends up burying it and Mars before dying, and he's like, maybe someone will find it someday. It's kind of like a nice question to ask. But his last words in his diary are, I don't know about forever and the eternal night about to fall, but in the here and now all is forgiven and nothing else matters. Even in the nothingness we matter, and the world carries on without us. And that is Traveling to Mars. I will say, writing a recap of a book that hasn't been out for 20 years and has a bunch of recaps that I can kind of like take pieces from, and just writing it off of
helpful
reading the book is a little, yeah, you know what, maybe there's a reason. But yeah, what did you guys think of this comic by Mark Russell and Robert O'Malley?
I have to say that this is maybe the this is maybe the most I have been delighted by a twist in a book in a while. When I got to the page where Vera reveals that she just totally made up the natural gas deposits, I literally like started cackling in the middle of my living room, and I had to like explain to Gwen why I was having this reaction. Because I was just like, yeah, fuck yeah. Like, they abandoned you. Like, like, lie to their asses. But I really enjoyed this book in general. It felt a little like a little slow going in the very beginning for me, but like as it started to like really like kind of get into its groove, and as I said, like once you hit like the twist that there was never any natural gas there at all, I had a great time with this book and I really enjoyed it. I really liked the relationship that Roy develops with like his little robot friends, and the like stuff with his wife was like an emotional roller coaster. I really liked this book. I had not heard of it at all before you guys brought it up, and I'm glad that we did it because it meant that I had to read it and I liked it a lot.
I had the twist spoiled for me like months ago when the book was coming out, because another comics podcast I listened to that covers like weekly releases talked about it. And I mean, it's spoilers are what they are, but when I knew it was coming, but when I got to the moment in the book, I really wished it hadn't been spoiled for me, because I think it,
yeah.
Yeah, I'm so glad that I had no knowledge of this book, because I like getting to that twist was like kind of a highlight of my week almost. Just because I was like so like viscerally delighted when it happened.
No, I mean it's a great twist, and I think the book gets much more interesting in those last three issues, to be honest. I'm a little mixed on the initial eight when it's, you know, just him on the ship going to Mars and you have the flashbacks to, you know, his life back on Earth. A lot of it I thought was really wordy in ways it didn't always need to be. It was a lot of text, and I understand that it's tough because it's just a guy by himself. And mm-hmm. when you want to fill in all the backstory, I don't want a Monday morning quarterback Mark Russell, but I did find it like occasionally kind of challenging to actually get through all of it because I don't think it was always the most engaging, his prose, that is. And so like there were individual moments in those first eight issues that I did really like, but once it hits that twist, and like it's not like the structure changes, because even those last three issues, it's a lot of internal monologue boxes, because the conceit is that all that monologuing is him writing a book, like his diary that he's been writing. So those are still there, but I think I was just way more engaged in the story at that point than I was early on, when I kind of didn't have a ton of investment in the story. I felt like, you know, Roy as a character was kind of hit or miss for me. I understand that like it's a cool conceit. It's like a classic conceit of, you know, the only person who would be willing to take on a suicide mission is a person who is going to be dead anyway. And so, you know, that it's fun. That part of it is fun. I like that conceit for the story, but then I don't think that the attempts to make him kind of an interesting or relatable character entirely work in those first eight issues. And we can get into, I'm sure we'll get more into that, but those are just kind of my top levels.
Yeah, it's I enjoyed it on the whole too, and I think there definitely was, you know, that moment in eight where it all kind of comes together, and the story does kind of shift there, where like the tone of it is, it's got the classic like Mark Russell staples of like, you know, big capitalist company, like the Easy Beef Co. is like running everything. And it takes me back to that that scene in Prez where like it's like Prez's dad is like on the hospital bed, and it's like, oh, do you want to spend like $80 for like it's you know, everything's itemized and paying and all that kind of stuff, and it's just such like a dystopian sort of thing here, which this one definitely is, and that's in there from the beginning. But it kind of does shift at the end to be more of a hopeful message and kind of like a positive thing that in spite of all this shit going on and how fucked the world is, that there is, you know, the importance of finding people and connecting with people and that kind of thing is, you know, never kind of goes away, which I thought was really strong. Yeah. I almost think like, I don't know if this is the strongest, like the cliffhangers are pretty okay, but I don't know if this is necessarily something that needs to be a comic book or like a short story kind of thing. I mean, I love reading comics, but I don't know if it really does anything exceptional with being a comic book as opposed to like just being a, kind of a story there.
This I feel like this could have been a short story, but there was enough charming to me about the art style that I enjoyed it as a like in a comic.
Yeah, I like it visually. I'm with Emily on that front. I think like, yeah, like does it do a lot of like new interesting stuff with the media? Not necessarily, but I don't think every comic has to. Like,
yeah,
if you want to make a comic, you want to make a comic, like that's fine. And I think yeah. The visuals are pretty strong, I especially when you see some of the flashbacks and when he's watching the kangaroo movies, and there's a bunch of, you know, cutaways to Earth, mm-hmm. and also cutaways to like historical events that sort of pop up throughout the issues. And I like all that stuff. I like having all of that stuff be represented visually. I think it really works. One thing early on, I think, is when you see the flashbacks to him when he's in the metal band Viking funeral, and the sort of like visual contrast between him as a younger guy and him as a dying adult, I think is a pretty effective one. like a lot of that stuff I think is pretty fun. There's a moment at the towards the end where there's a flashback to a hurricane where he saves a bunch of kittens and one of them he isn't able to save one of them, and there's a panel of it like drowning, and it's like it's a really emotional, like it hits you, right? It's
really sad.
And I don't think that necessarily works as well without the visual component. And there's a couple good like visual gags. There's the snow cone thing with you just see the robot hand, like he gets in like a spat with a couple of the robots, and then you just see the hand extend from the door with holding a snow cone. Like there's some fun, there's enough fun stuff in there visually that I feel like this wouldn't have worked as well without being a short story. But even in terms of like, there's not very much action even, for instance, which is usually like one of the, like that is like a classic staple of comics is, you know, you can show these kinds of action sequences, and they kind of bait you into thinking there's going to be one in issue 5 or 6 when the other corporations, starfighters show up. But it's kind of like it's kind of an interesting thing that it's not really like it feels very kind of like hard sci-fi in the sense that it's trying to pull from, you know, what real ships would be like. So it's not this like exciting like dogfight. It's just sort of, you know, these ships are slowly maneuvering into one another. They're not shooting each other with lasers even. They're just trying to collide with his ship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But still, like, even though it doesn't have that stuff, I feel like there's enough good use of the visuals that I think it really works. The art style is not my favorite, like, on the whole, but it's...
I feel like it worked.
It works really well. Like, and they do a lot of good stuff with it. It's just a personal thing that, like, there's something about the filter to it, I think. Or it might actually be the coloring, to be honest.
Okay.
The kind of, like, digital coloring gives it, like, a kind of, like, a silly putty feel, almost, to some of the human faces. That's very minor. Sure. It's not really something that really negatively impacts the story. And I'm sure it's an intentional choice, too.
Yeah.
I mean, he's kind of supposed to look sickly and die.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
You know, so...
Yeah, and any humans we see on Earth, they're not doing well.
Yeah. Generally.
Yeah, it's bad for everyone.
Yeah. Well, what did you guys think of them? I mean, you mentioned the flashbacks. Do you like how they were kind of brought in and deployed? Because, I mean, for a book, it's pretty reliant on the flashbacks there.
I liked getting to, like, you know, we're getting used to Roy, and then we also get, like, just these little, like, glimpses into the life that he led up until this point. It, like, you know, key moments and key events in his life that like, were influential on what happened as his life went forward. I like that sort of like slow unfolding after we've kind of already gotten to know him a little.
Yeah, it's good storytelling, right? Like, you up front are getting the sort of cold open where you understand his circumstances, and then you kind of backfill to see how he got to the place he is.
Yeah.
I mean, not like how he got cancer, but like, you know, how he...
Well, I mean, you know, how does anybody get cancer?
Well, yeah, there's lots of reasons.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Microplastics, things of that. You know, the CIA's got a ray laser beam that gives it to you.
My body can handle the microplastics. I'm just building.
If you wear reflective clothing, it'll bounce back to them.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's what the tinfoil hat. No, the tinfoil hats are for. That's for like stopping mind reading.
You don't want mind control. Right? No, so you do mind control. You do tinfoil up here, reflective for the rest.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you know about this.
And you wear cotton underwear. Cotton underwear. That's the key.
Psychopath, Alex. Just completely down the rabbit hole, huh? Just all the way in on the InfoWars shit now? Or,
I mean, I'll say is I bought my wedding tux, and it's reflective.
It's got the reflective padding in it. It's
Yeah.
I don't want to derail, but I do have to ask you guys real quick if either of you saw, like, there was a video, like a TikTok video that was being shared around of the woman grocery shopping with the tinfoil hat on.
No, yeah. That sounds...
She's pushing a cart with her kid, and her kids are in the cart, and she has a tinfoil hat on, and it's, like, captioned. I don't know if it's a joke or if it's, like, if it's serious, because I didn't actually see the original.
Did not do any research on this whatsoever.
Me neither, but it is extremely funny. It's captioned, like, I'm done pretending. I'm wearing my tinfoil hat. Our society is so awesome.
<It's>, we are so sure good. Is.
But no, yeah, I do really like that sort of building on, like, building that in later. I wish that I thought the reflection, like, his reflections in the present day on what's happening was more effective. But I kind of felt like it didn't really land, because I think part of it is just because you're constantly bouncing between reading his journal and then reading the dialogue in the flashback. And I'm not seven. I have object permanence. I can keep,
hell yeah.
I can walk and chew bubblegum. I can keep two ideas in my head. But it is one of those things where I feel like it's just a little too overwrought with kind of purple prose.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always a bad thing, but it is, like, I just wish that had landed for me a little bit more than it did. Because structurally, I love the way that the story works, but it's just that one thing, like, those aspects just don't.
And I think it does really kind of come into its own at the end, where it's like, you know, he's clear what his message is, and there's a lot of, you know, prosy stuff basically throughout the whole issue, but it's like, it's a central theme, and he's like, this is what it is. This is what we're doing here. And it really ties it nicely together. But yeah, to get there, it's a little bit of a journey.
I mean, yeah, thematically, it is obviously all about, like, this dude's regrets of all the things he didn't do, or the things that he did that he wishes he didn't do, as he's, you know, on this 6-month voyage or whatever, dying. And so I think it makes sense that it would be a lot of him doing self-reflection. I think thematically it makes sense. Thematically it works. It's just
that doesn't make it exciting. Yeah, necessarily.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait, but before we move on to your next question, this is another non-sequitur, and I'm so sorry, but I've been trying to figure out what it is that Kermit behind you is reminding me of, just specifically the way that he's posed. And Alex, have you seen the image of the, like, wax Lincoln statue, like,
That's melted.
That's like melting, and his, like, head is, like, fallen back, and it looks like he's, like, getting, like, magnificent head. That's the pose that Kermit is in for me. And that's what's been, like, bothering me this whole time. So I just needed
That's really good. He's been like that all day. So
I just get the Garfield plush and, like, put its head in, in its lap and just make it look like Kermit's just leaning back going, like, damn, shoddy, okay.
Happy Pride Month, I guess. Oh, no, he's doing it.
Let's fucking go.
Not because they don't, that because they're different species, but because he's too big.
Jesus fucking Christ.
So imagine I'm on a work call, right? And just, like, talking about a game. But in the background,
I'm imagining this right now.
In the background, there's like a Kermit and a Garfield. And they're just, Yep.
Alex, I want you to know I just screenshotted this image.
Thank you.
I will be sharing it with our friends.
Can you just share it to our comics group chat in general?
You guys are included in the friends.
Anyway, okay, so Alex, you had another question.
I did. It was unrelated, surprisingly, to what you were talking about.
It was so unrelated.
A bit. Oh my god. So right when this book started, like, with the inner monologue stuff going on, I'm like, oh, okay, it's a Batman comic. And that was my, like, mindset for the start. And then there were things where I was like, ooh, it's doing some things that Day Tripper does, but Day Tripper does it better because Day Tripper is, like, the fucking greatest comic.
Was Day Tripper also a Mark Russell, or who did
No. Fabian Moon and Gabriel Both stuff.
Oh, that's right. It's just better.
A lot of, like, very prosy, like, narration stuff going on. And
it's also,
like, you know,
kind of similar structurally.
With the flashbacks and the tone, and, I mean, you know, it's all about, life and regret and choices and, you know, all
there
that
is
kind of
also
stuff.
Like, I also made the Daytrooper connection in my head because in one of the early issues, he talks about wanting to have a good obituary. And, like, that's one thing that, like, he, I guess there's some connection with his father about the obituary that he talks about. And I was like, oh, that is very Daytrooper. And then, like, that is a big, another big theme of the story is, like, what legacy he's going to leave behind. But
yes. But yeah, what did you guys think of the, what did you guys think of the inner monologue? Because it's,
I thought it was pretty effective. I like the, like, framing device that he's, like, kind of recording this as, like, a diary that he's going to bury on Mars or whatever. Just as, like, a last testament to his life. Because, like, as far as he knows at the time, like, he is sort of, like, he is just kind of sacrificing himself to the betterment of humanity, even if he doesn't really have that long to live. So, like, you know, but I thought that the inner monologue worked for me. I feel like you wouldn't get as much out of Roy's story if you didn't have it. Because
yeah, that's the thing I keep coming. That's why I kind of struggle with it, because I didn't always love the, like, reading it.
Yeah,
but I don't think it's one of those. It's not one of those things where, you know, we used to rail on, you know, superhero comics for, like, telling and not showing, like,
yeah,
like these things you can show, like, how characters emote. It's a visual medium, you should use that.
Yeah,
but the stuff that is going on in his internal monologue, I think, is legitimately too complex. You can't just show him thinking about it and expect, like, people
yeah.
to fully mm-hmm. grasp what's happening. So it's necessary. I don't want to that's why I said, like, I don't want a Monday morning quarterback Mark Russell, because you definitely do need it. The book doesn't work without that framing device. So,
for sure. Earth's not in a great place during this book, and you know there are some prezi vibes as well with the beef company and just those names and that kind of stuff.
I mean, it felt like the way a lot of things played out in this book felt realistic to me, as far as, like, what corporations would do and the actions that they would take in these circumstances. And it did feel like a pretty realistic trajectory for the Earth and country as we know it. So Earth and its countries as we know them. So yeah, I had no trouble with any of that, with any immersion in that, because it felt like a really realistic trajectory for us to be on.
Yeah, I agree. It was a strange experience reading a Mark Russell book where that aspect element of it is so de-emphasized, because I feel like every Mark Russell book I've read in the past, that's, like, the social commentary and the satire is sort of front and center. And I think, like, this book isn't trying to be funny in the way a lot of other Mark Russell books are. I don't...
It was pretty funny, I thought.
Really? I thought there were some humorous moments. Like, it's not devoid of levity.
Sure.
But it's not doing as much satire. It's a much more personal story, like, about,
I guess I have much less of a familiarity with, like, Mark Russell's oeuvre than you guys do. I mean, this was definitely, like, Prez was definitely funnier than this on the whole, it just had more, like, a higher quantity of comedy, but I don't know I thought this book was pretty funny, so but maybe that's just,
I mean,
comparison.
It's probably just one of those things where humor at the end of the day is pretty subjective, and I just didn't. It, like,
maybe so, yeah.
I just think of things where, like, of his other books, like Second Coming or Billionaire Island, or even.
I haven't read it either.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's fair. Even Snagglepuss, which also. And the Flintstones, even, which
I didn't realize that he did the Snagglepuss.
He did do the Snagglepuss comic.
Yeah. Which,
and the Flintstones? I only read a little bit of the Flintstones. Yeah. I didn't.
I'm a Flintstones hater.
I read a little bit of the Snagglepuss, and I enjoyed it more than Flintstones. I should maybe try and go back and read more, but.
Yeah. No, that's fair. But when I think of those, I'm like Wonder Twins, like those all have serious.
Oh, wait, was that the Wonder Twins that we did?
Yes.
Yeah. That was definitely funnier than this.
Yeah. Like I think of those books as being like they all do the satire and the sort of social political commentary, but like I find them to be comedies first and everything else kind of like as a.
Okay. Okay.
Whereas this book is not, I wouldn't say that this genre-wise, I wouldn't say this is a comedy. Like
no, this is not this comedy first, definitely.
This is much more of like a character study drama. It has that classic Mark Russell satire is there of like, yeah, it's like, you know, the Crazy Beef Corporation is the one that sends, or the Easy Beef Corporation, sorry, is the one that sends them out there. It's like, it's a goofy name. It's like a goofy conceit that like, a vegan meat company is like getting involved in the space race. Like there is like a lot of like that scene where they do the where one of the rival companies tries to send a fake version of his ex-wife to talk
that
to
was
him.
That really got me actually like,
no, like like I said, it has levity, it has funny moments, but it is not front and center in the way it usually is in Mark Russell comics. I guess some of his more, if it's a pattern of his more recent output, because even Superman Space Age was also much more dramatic, I would say. So it's an interesting shift in his writing, I think, that maybe now there's like, maybe he's just like, he's there's not as much to laugh at anymore. He's in his Batman era now. He's out of the Joker.
He's been I don't know if he's a reply guy anymore, but he was like 4 years ago to like political stuff.
Yeah. So
I think that genuinely does like do things to your brain. And you know, that's all I'll say.
it sure does. But no, I agree with you. Like I think there's something interesting going on there. Of I don't know like why he chose to do that, but I think like. There's definitely an element of this that's much more, I don't know, it's like, it feels much more personal in a way than, it's not as like, not that Prez and Wonder Twins aren't personal stories, they're like, the characters are great, but it just has like, it's so focused on like this one guy and like a specific element of like his regrets and the way that his life played out and the mark that he's going to leave on the world. And like, yeah, that obviously all happens in the context of like all this sort of goofy satire of capitalism and contemporary life. And that's there in the background because like, that's just the reality that people that we live in. Right. But yeah, like it just felt de-emphasized in a way that is not typical of his work.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And that's not a bad thing. Like, to be clear, I like that he's like, he has range and is doing some sort of different.
He did a serious one this time. A little bit.
Yeah.
Like I mean, the opposite of doing a silly one.
Yeah. Kind of. He hasn't had his holy terror moment yet, and that's good. Only one
person. I don't think he'll ever have a holy terror moment. I think he's like.
I hope so. I would hope not.
It's true that most people don't have a. Well, I don't know. Most Americans probably do have.
The thing
a holy
is,
terror moment
okay, so like, you know, Frank Miller obviously had the holy terror moment. Mr. The Boys had his holy terror moment, and that was The Boys.
Yeah, Garth Ennis when he wrote the.
Garth
book,
Ennis.
Wrote the Boys.
I don't know. Yeah. I hope it doesn't happen to Mark Russell. He seems.
I don't
like
think.
A nice
it, I don't think it will. I like. I don't know. I'm looking at his Twitter feed right now. But you know, I don't want to read too much into it. But you know, I think that he's like he seems mostly well adjusted.
Sure.
For a comic book writer, it's impressive.
Yeah.
Hey,
most of them
really
aren't.
Is. No. But speaking of a few of the moments of levity, there is the beef company was like, oh, you know what? We set you up with movies for 6 months, and it was like nine kangaroo kid movies, and they were like, oh yeah, we want to do comedy so you wouldn't like kill yourself. And it was like, oh, it's kind of funny.
I think if I had to watch whatever nine installment comedy franchise, if those are the only movies I had access to, I would kill myself faster. It doesn't even matter if I think they're actually funny or not, but like The idea of watching the same comedy franchise over and over sounds horrifying.
It would be a lot.
And
what if
I really admire this character for being able to like not end it all, you know, the fifth time through, like have it like
I didn't care for him until, you know, he was on the fifth Kangaroo rewatch, Kangaroo Kid, and I was like, this guy's strong. You know, he can do this.
Yeah.
He can
Locked the fuck in.
A couple of my favorite scenes were like when he and the robots are watching the Kangaroo Kid movies together. I was endlessly delighted by like first the robots like not knowing what laughter is and being really confused, and then when they try to approximate the laughter and all they can do is like make chicken noises. Like that was so charming to me, and I enjoyed it immensely.
Yeah, and I think at the end when the robots, like, he's like, he does his big speech to them and they leave and they're all doing the chicken sound, and it's like, oh, this is like emotional. That's
I
nice.
Loved it. And just, that's yeah, great. when like they're like peeking around the corner and he's like, ah, guys, come on in, watch the movies with me. Like, my heart was so warmed. It was very sweet. I really loved the relationship between Roy and his little robot friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
The robots are fun. The robots are also another instance of, like, I think the visuals being absolutely essential.
For sure. Because
they're so emotive.
Yeah.
In really fun ways. I guess that is an aspect of where there's a lot of levity in the book, is, like, they move in, like, kind of goofy ways. They don't, like, have faces exactly, but, like, they do expressions. Like, they get droopy sometimes.
One of them gets PTSD.
One of them almost gets blown off the ship by an asteroid, and he goes and hides in the cabinet. And
Roy promises he'll never make him go out there again.
Yeah, it's good.
It was really, it's sad that the robot got PTSD, but it was really sweet that Roy was just like, I'll never make you do that again.
Yeah. It is. And it really, you know, it builds the relationship. So when you get to Mars and there's all the robots there, you're like, you're locked in to care, which is nice. The first half of this book, it's pretty depressing, right? Like, this guy has cancer. He's been sent into space by this fucking fake meat company. And, you know, he's talking to his mom a bit, and his mom's like, wait, why'd you leave without saying? And it's like, it's kind of, you know, it's heartbreaking and stuff. And then by the end, the message there and the whole thing of, like, you know, all is forgiven and nothing matters, which is like sort of the mantra of this series, it somehow pulls out like a hopeful message from such a cynical and dark place. What did you guys think of that, and did it land for you?
It kind of landed for me. I liked this book quite a bit, and I feel for the difficult position that Roy was put in by, like, humanity, because, like, he has to show up to what is essentially a civilization of, like, somewhat intelligent-ish beings that, like, have been abandoned by the rest of his race, and he has to kind of account for that. And I don't know, I appreciated that he, like, even though, like, he was so angry about it, which, like, understandable, like, he was able to approach them with, like, a profound amount of empathy and care. And yeah, the whole, like, this book worked for me, basically.
I also do, like, in general, I like the sentiment that it ends on, and that he kind of, like, he spent all this time on the ship reflecting on his life, and in the end he imparts what he sort of, like, through that self-interrogation, what he's learned to the robots, which is essentially that, like, his obsession with, like, legacy and the things that he's done is ultimately somewhat misguided, that it's sort of just like, and I like that it ends up being this counterbalance to what Vera says when he first shows up, which is that Vera says that, you know, there's, like, you know, drudgery is meaningful or whatever. I don't remember the exact quote. I should have written it down. But I like it, the idea that it's like, yeah, like, it's not those instances of, like, labor or, like, the things that you, like, those things don't really matter that much at the end of the day. That's not what gives you, that's not where, like, value as a living being or whatever comes from. I was going to say human, but the robots aren't human. But like I do like that sentiment, right? That he goes through all of this and all this like study, self-study and self-reflection, and kind of comes away realizing that it's like, yeah, it's like you kind of have to just throw your hands up at the end of the day, and like it, what happened happened, and you know, you just have to, you kind of have to internalize that and live with it, and
yeah,
make the best of what you can. It's a good ending. I like that kind of gets vocalized to the robots. I kind of wish that there was more done with like the sentience of the robots, like that was explored a little bit more. Mm. But I understand that it's like that would probably broaden the scope of the story a little too far beyond, you know, Roy's life and his psyche, just being a character study about this one guy, basically.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And there's, I mean, you know, in the whole thing while he's in space, he keeps getting messages from the beef company being like, oh, you got a statue, and like, you're the most famous person in the world, you're going down in history. And it's like, you know, just
yeah,
his realization at the end, just it ties so well with that, and just about like, you know, the value of connecting on like a small level, and it doesn't really matter if someone will remember you in 1,000 years, as long as, you know, when you're here, you're able to.
Or someone won't, and it doesn't matter that much.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, I think the thing was, like, the most famous person, or, like, the oldest famous person was, like, some
4,000
general
old,
guy
yeah.
for 4,000 years ago, and humans have been around for, like, you know, shit ton of millions of years, just for that perspective. So it's, like, great. So people know about you, but do they care about you? Probably not, so.
I also, the statue bit is also my favorite flashback, because I love the fish.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god, yes.
Oh yeah. Oh my god, I can't believe we haven't talked about the fish.
That was actually like the emotional high low. Like that was the one that like when the fish yeah, oh my gosh.
That really part is that. One of the bits of the comic that like absolutely like landed for me. Like I had no issues with that section.
Very
I
cute. Enjoyed
a
it.
Great little side
immensely.
Story.
Yeah. For those who didn't read this book, that's fine, because we're talking about it. But there's this, the place where he's from is like the big bass capital of the world. And there's a little bit of thing being like, no one can dispute it. And no one really cares that we're the big bass capital of the world, but we have the statue. And it's talking about this fish that was caught and put in a tank. And it, you know, kept on trying to save the fish in the tank. And there's like, even when they stopped swimming, he's trying to make a move and kind of stuff. And became a local hero. And at his funeral, there were like, the whole town showed up. And it's like, he's just a fish. But yeah, maybe we're all just a fish. Who knows?
So true, Bessie.
What was your favorite character? Mine was the fish.
I mean, I feel like it's cheating, but I can't choose between Leopold and Albert. Like, actually, you know, that's not, like, I love them, but actually my favorite character is Vera. Gaslight, gatekeep, robot boss. I just cannot express the like pure like delight and joy that I felt getting to the page where she says, I made it the fuck up. Like, I was just like, yes, yes. Like, it was so delightful. I had not considered that as a possibility at any point. I was just like, I'm like, okay, like we're getting close to Mars, but I know we've got like 2 or 3 issues left. So like, what else is happening? And did not see that coming from a mile away. Absolutely pleased that I was not spoiled on that twist, so that I got to experience it in real time. But yeah, basically, I just liked all the robots. I thought the robots were really cute. I thought that there was some good robot design, and I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, like, you know, Vera sending out the same message for 12 years, no one responds. So it's like, I'll change it up, see what happens.
No, yeah, like, don't blame her at all. Like, she was abandoned. She was doing her job.
Jean-Luc. Favorite character.
I also am going with the fish. I think it's cheating.
Yes.
I don't even remember the fish's name, but
he had a cute little name.
I should remember the fish's name because I love the fish. Also, I think it would be totally valid to choose both of the robots, because it's like a C-3PO R2-D2 situation. Like, you can't be like, C-3PO is my favorite character.
Do not separate them.
R2. Yeah, like, no. They're
do not separate
one entity.
Them.
IG-88 is my favorite character.
Hell yeah, brother. That's a good ass. Now, that's a good ass character. You want to know a cool thing about IG-88 that I've been that I've been thinking about a lot lately, actually?
Is it that he was allowed to have sex by the Jedi Council because there were so few robots?
That's Ti-Adi Mundi, actually.
Oh, right. Oh, jeez.
And he's not a robot. He's a... That's not canon anymore. You know, the Acolyte ruining Star Wars, destroying Ki-Adi Mundi's polycule. You fucking hate to see it. His catty wives who hate each other are not canon anymore. It's so fucked what they did to him. And they're coming for you, too. They're going to do this to you. They're going to take away your catty wives.
Wear reflective clothing. Just do it.
No, but the IG-88 thing, which I, you know, is somewhat relevant to this book, is that I've just been stewing on this, in part because of the some other Star Wars shit, but the bit at the in his Tales of the Bounty Hunters short story where he uploads his consciousness to the second Death Star and is in the process of starting a robot revolution, a droid revolution, when the Death Star is destroyed, when the second Death Star is destroyed, which also is not canon anymore, but, you know, relevant to this in a similar way of like, you know, I'm a robot and the fucking or bioorganics didn't treat me like a real person and they enslaved my kind and now you know what, fuck those guys. And it's a different vibe in Traveling to Mars. It's more of a like, it's not so much a fuck those guys as a please, you know, notice me again, senpai type vibe, but you know, it's the same. I think it's like comes from the same place of like the robots who are just viewed as tools when in fact they're actually alive and have sentience. Yeah. And I said earlier, I wish that there had been a little more of that
Maybe if they did a 12 issue instead of an 11, like a weirdo, but I kind of like the quirkiness that they did 11.
I also really like the 11 issue structure because issue 8, an 8 issue mini is like pretty normal, right? Like that's a common length. And 8 should be the end, right? Like if the story is building as it's been, like the way it's built, it should end on 8. But it's essentially like an 8 issue mini with a 3 issue mini stapled onto the end. And it has like the false ending where a miniseries would normally end, but then it's like, no, we actually have this other stuff. I don't know. Structurally, I think that's kind of cool. I assume this was always solicited as an 11, but I think it would be it have been a great bit if it was like solicited as an 8 issue, and then the twist happened, and it's like 3 more issues, guys. But unfortunately, I don't think
isn't that what happened to Wonder Twins, where it was like it was going to be a 6 issue and then it did well, it was supposed to be a 12, it a 12 then down to a 6 then back up to a 9?
It was a 6 and then it sold really well, so it got another arc, which is a bit different. It's a bit of a different situation. I think this got like the 3 extra issues because it sold well, although I think like
no there's no way they would have.
Ahoy books don't do crazy numbers, but like they keep paying Mark Russell to make books, so surprisingly sell pretty well over there.
Surprisingly, not an Ahoy comic. This is a Blaze.
A Blaze. That's right. It's not Ahoy.
I had honestly never even heard of a Blaze publishing until reading this comic. They have a book called Archibald the Monster Slayer.
I have nothing against a Blaze as a publisher. Like, you know, good for them. Indie publishers are good. But it always is really fucked up that we just don't see Mark Russell. Well, I guess he did that Superman book a couple years ago. But they didn't let him do the... It always bumps me out that, like, DC wouldn't let him do the shit that he actually wanted to do with the Jesus Superman book. And so he does a bunch of stuff elsewhere. But, you know, good for all of them.
And I think that book is, I don't know, it's had a couple of miniseries.
It has. I think it's on like its third miniseries. There was one that I just noticed when I was looking at new releases a few weeks ago. Mm. Maybe it was a trade, but it definitely came up recently.
Yeah, I read the first volume of that. I got to go back and read more. But that was all, we were just killing time to let you guys know that Leroy Brown was the name of the fish.
Leroy Brown.
And, hell yeah.
Good ass name for a fish.
On its tombstone, it says, most bass are just fish. But Leroy Brown was something special, which I think is just wonderful. Yep. But they knocked down Leroy Brown's statue to put up good old main characters, good old Roy's. So, wow. Last question. Which character cry most?
I'll
go first because it's Vera, because Vera's a robot but was abandoned and learned to cry.
Yeah, I could get behind that. I was gonna say maybe like Candace, maybe.
Yeah, I think Candace probably cries a lot. She seems, you know, she's a woman. She's emotional.
I'm glad to see
Emily engaging in some classic misogyny.
Eat an entire dick, so, John Luke.
You know, I don't think Roy seems like the crying type. The PTSD robot probably cried a lot. That I think like probably just like a week of crying in that closet from its near death experience. I can imagine. So I'm going with him.
I also guess that Leroy, like, if fish is always in water, so it's always crying? Question mark?
I don't think that
follows.
If you cry and you're underwater, are you really crying?
We should go swimming.
Yeah.
My apartment complex has a pool. You guys can visit.
Whoa. We'll send one of our hosts today.
Yeah.
One of the...
We're sending someone over.
Of course.
Yes. Oh, that sound in the distance. That is our special Pride Month Doomsday Clock edition. Wow. Look at it go. That means it's time for our cry space, which is the part of the show where we highlight one thing that, like the characters in this book, some of them, maybe not all of them, made us cry this week. You guys got a cry space?
I have a couple. That I'm bringing to the table. My first cry space is that because we had to move this recording by a couple of days, I'm no longer wearing my incredible I Saw the TV Glow shirt because I had to put it in the laundry. But my other cry space is that although Chad is coming to visit me and I do pick him up from the train station in like 2 hours because the train has been delayed, he is still on the fence about going to the golf club with me tonight. So I am crying because there is still the possibility that Chad will not go out with me tonight. But I'm fine to go by myself. I just wanted the experience of taking Chad to the golf club.
I simply can't imagine Chad at the club.
I mean, that's why I want Chad to go, because I think it would be fun.
Yeah, you want to embarrass him in the club?
No, I want him to be able to come back to Wisconsin with anecdotes about the weird shit that he saw at the golf club.
About the club. We haven't recorded an episode of Club yet, which seems like a mishap, honestly.
True.
Yeah, I can't think of a better environment to record an audio medium in.
We can do it like in the bathroom. No one goes there in the club. It's always empty. Always.
Yeah.
We get a lot of guests. That's cool. That's a good cry space, Emily. We'll have an update for that in 2 weeks.
Yeah, we will. I will definitely give an update during our next recording.
See, it sounds like a good weekend though, because it's like Friday is very like, okay, Emily choice. Saturday going distillery, very Chad choice, and Sunday's a movie, which is like you guys kind of meet in the middle. Although Chad doesn't go to movies.
Really? Yeah, but it's a small theater, and I feel like we'll probably be the only people there because it's like, I'm honestly shocked that the theater is still showing this movie, so I feel like everybody that's wanted to see it has probably gone by now.
Jean-Luc, you cry?
Oh boy, do I ever. I don't know. I really didn't come prepared for the cry space. It's been a bad space,
not the fucking debate from last night?
It's been a bad 24 hours. I don't talk about politics on this show.
Or ever.
Yeah, never. No, that it's been bad. Things have gotten bad, but we don't need to really get into all of that. I don't know. I guess. My cry space is that I'm spending a lot of money on DVDs and Blu-rays that are from the Criterion Collection, and even though they're on sale, I have to spend a lot of. Well, I don't have to spend any money, but I'm going to, and it's going to make me sad for like a little bit, and then it's going to make me happy when I get them and when I'm watching the movies, and then a little sad again after I do that. Well, it's not like I can't watch the movies again, but it's more of a like, you know, I will miss having, you know, however much money I spend on Criterion Blu-rays.
Sure.
That's but fair. I will enjoy having the Criterion Blu-rays.
And see, I feel like, yeah. Go ahead.
And some of them might make me cry.
The cry space that it keeps on giving. I feel like this is, if we were a podcast that had a glad space, I feel like that would be your glad space. But because we have a cry space, it's your cry space. Because getting Criterion things for...
The thing is, I don't really feel negative emotions, so I don't, like, cry spaces are hard for me.
We're 56 episodes in and you're telling us this now?
No, actually, I do feel a lot of negative emotions. I just don't want to, like, I don't want to bring the mood down every time we record and be like, yeah, I saw, you know, another 100 people got killed in a massacre in Gaza this week, and I was pretty fucked up about that. You know, like, it brings the mood off the show down.
So I feel like going, like, hey, this is the Doomsday Clock. Remember that series?
Yeah, no, exactly.
That is like...
Yeah, it doesn't really work. So I try to keep it. That's why I talk about movies, but like none of the movies that I've seen lately really made me cry. Let me check my Letterboxd really quickly to make sure I'm not forgetting anything. See The Bike Riders. No. Oh, well, I did rewatch Neon Genesis Evangelion, the end of Evangelion, and that always kind of gets me, but you know, I've talked about that before. Yeah. Not much crying for movies this month, like some good stuff, but The Strangers Chapter 1 kind of made me cry. Madeline Petch deserves a lot better. It's fucking terrible.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. She keeps getting she needs to fire her fucking agent. Like, I don't understand how she keeps getting roped into these horrible movies. Like, horrible horror movies, because she deserves to be a scream queen for real.
Also, I'm just going to come out and say it. If you make a PG-13 horror movie, you should get the guillotine.
At this point, kind of. Like,
PG-13 horror should be illegal. Like, either you put a gruesome kill in your movie, or you don't make a fucking horror movie. Like, get out of my face with this, like, oh, we have to cut away every time someone dies. Oh, we can't actually show anything cool in the movie. Like,
we need to make money. Money, please.
Money, please.
And I'm not saying everything has to be like Terrifier 2. Like, you know, there's a middle ground, but you know, I want a little PG-13 is not the rating for horror movies. It's not. If you want to make PG-13 movies, you can go work for fucking DreamWorks or some shit. I don't know.
Right.
Damn.
That's what's your cry space, Alex?
It's twofold. I mean, the first fold is that I was going out for the day. And my mom was like, oh, Adam boiled this egg. And I was like, oh, cool, I'll take it as a snack. And then I was outside and I went to go crack the egg and it was raw. And then it was just like all over me. And I was like, what?
Did your mom just...
I've been punked by my mom. I was like, good one, but...
That is awesome.
But why did this happen? And then she was like, no, I thought it was hard boiled. And then Adam was like, I said it wasn't boiled. And I was like, oh. And I was like, that's cool.
Oh, unforged. That's cool.
That's egg in awesome. My face. Yeah. The other one is that we're looking for condos, and the one that we put an offer in sold for like 100,000 more than what we put in. So we're almost there.
Fucking Christ. Just
need a raise, I guess. You know what? Once our Patreon numbers start climbing, we'll be okay. So wait, we'll need to make 300K.
Well, hey, once you start getting my rent from the offer that you to come move up to Toronto, you know, then
hey, it's a good offer. It's a good offer. Okay, my real cry space, though, I know this is my third one, but I'm hosting this week, so is that me and Jean-Luc are not actually going to be able to see Carly Rae Jepsen together in D.C.
Oh, wait, that's so sad.
Because we haven't booked our tickets yet. I don't know.
That's true. It's true. I want you to know that I did very strongly consider. I was looking at flights and
it's tickets. I'm gonna keep an eye out because the tickets for the thing are cheap. Like, it's like it's gonna cost $80 for a baseball game and to see Carly Rae Jepsen, which is cool. And the flights are like, they leave like at 10 a.m and I can go to the game and fly home the same day.
Yeah, it would be a beautiful experience.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But the big problem for me is that it's a 6-hour flight across the country. So if it was like, if he was in, like, I don't know, Indiana, maybe it would be... Not that I want to go to Indiana, but, you know, you get the... Like, if it was, like, more equidistant. Like, if I could do the thing where I go there, go to the baseball game, see Carly Rae Jepsen with my friend Alex, and then get back on a plane and fly back home, like, be a no-brainer.
Right.
But, But
you gotta stay a night, probably.
I would have to, yeah.
Or fly overnight.
I'd have to either get a red eye and then get a red eye and then fly out really late, or yeah, stay a night. So not that I'd be opposed to like staying in DC for a weekend, but it's just, you know, it starts,
the thing.
Costs start adding up.
Don't buy the Criterion shit then. How about that?
Yeah. Well, okay. It's not Criterion Collection or go see Carly Rae Jepsen with Alex. Like, it's not like.
That's what it sounds like. I don't know. Emily would have to be the judge.
The amount of Criterion Collection Blu-rays that I would limit myself to is probably less than what it would cost to go to Carly Rae Jepsen and pay for plane tickets. So
I don't know.
You know,
I'll
think about it.
All right, I'm gonna keep an eye on prices. Maybe we get a cool deal. I'll have my flight tracker on. Yeah, but all that to say, this is the end of our show. Thanks for staying. We're only at 1:06, which is cool because we have 2 hours and 30 minutes. So we're going to start again.
Me. Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Jean-Luc, you're hosting this one. Same book. But you get to do that. No. This is the plug section. You can follow us on Twitter at Crying Book Club. Rate and review us some amount of stars. We're not picky. You can find Jean-Luc on Twitter at Mountain Dew Liker, but he will not accept your follow request unless you're cool. So do what you will. You can also check him out on Letterboxd. I don't think you have to accept. Do you have to accept on Letterboxd? Is that a thing?
No, you can't have private accounts on Letterboxd.
Who would have a private Letterboxd?
You don't friend people on Letterboxd so much as you just follow them.
Yeah. But like you can't like make a private account and say a bunch of inflammatory things from behind a lock that you would never say if it was a public account. So
that's good for Letterboxd, but JL Bot Bill, that's where you can find Jean-Luc watching movies, some good stuff, some maybe some Criterion Collection stuff soon, I'm sure, revisiting maybe. For the first time. Find me on Twitter at Alex Hanziuk. All I tweet about is work stuff, so maybe don't. You can find Emily on Twitter at mpandanara, Letterboxd Pandabor, Twitch Pandabor, podcast Imagine Me in Utena, Fresh Podcast Market, That Looks Terrible, and producing some of your favorite shows. Well, we're not going to say which, but it's probably your favorite. So
there's a Glee podcast. I know about that one.
Mostly the Glee podcast, yeah. Because I was working it's on great. That the other night when I sent you guys a picture of Ditto.
It's a great, great
very
concept.
Helpful.
Yeah. Yep. But that's it. Any final words, Jean-Emily?
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 That's our ship name.
Okay, let's Jesus get out of here. Okay, guys, I've been shipping you for 56 episodes, and I'm glad one of you finally said it. That's great. Wow.
But one thing I did want to say. Yes. I meant to say this earlier, but I Googled it because we were talking about the Eisners. So Traveling to Mars was nominated for Best New Series, and it lost to Public Domain by Chip Zdarsky. Is a pretty good. I read that one.
Okay.
And then... Mark Russell was also nominated for Best Writer, and he lost to James Tynion IV, which
well,
that sounds right to me.
You know what? That's fair. That's fair. I also do really want to go back and read Department of Truth, because I've only read the first
new
two volumes.
New issue came out this week.
Ooh, we should do some Department of Truth for the show.
It's a good book.
That's great.
I was enjoying it while I was reading it, and then I just kind of fell off.
Same. In 2 weeks, we're talking about Star Wars.
Sure. Yeah. Chad said he's down. He's gonna come on.
I forgot about
Dark Empire.
Star Wars Dark Empire, the weird amount of issue miniseries. Well, how many issues is it?
Come on, Alex. This is like your favorite comic.
Six
you
issue
love
limited
Star Wars
series.
Dark Empire.
I'm so excited to read this for the first time. Written by Tom Veitch, illustrated by Cam Kennedy and Jim Bakely. So. This is the one. This is good. We'll get all into it. And bye.
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 Oh, shit. So Dark Empire 1 6 issues. Dark Empire is 2 6 issues. And Empire's End is 2 issues.
We don't need to read all of them.